Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Welcome to the Natural Healing Show. Keep it natural. Be the Natural Healing Show.
Hello, you are listening to the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one bestselling author. You can find out more about me and my work at CatherineKerrigan.com and UnlimitedEnergyNow.com. While you're there, definitely sign up for my newsletter so you can learn even more about how you can heal yourself naturally. Now, our guest today is Jim Gottstein. Jim Gottstein is a Harvard-educated lawyer. Now, you may be wondering, why are we having a lawyer here on the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio? Jim Gottstein is the founder of the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights. He's also the author of the Zyprexa Papers. And you can find out more about Jim Gottstein and his wonderful work at a couple of websites, the ZyprexaPapers.com, PsychRights.org, and finally, JimGottstein.com. Welcome, Jim Gottstein.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
So, Jim Gottstein, you have written a book called the Zyprexa Papers. First of all, for our audience, what exactly is Zyprexa?
So, Zyprexa is a what's called the second generation of neuroleptics, which was originally developed to give to people diagnosed with schizophrenia. The first generation drugs were drugs like Thorazine and Haldol. And they were marketed, the newer ones like Zyprexa were marketed as better, safer, and they've proven to be the opposite of both. The pharmaceutical industry and psychiatry calls them antipsychotics, but they're not, they don't have antipsychotic properties for most. And the original term was neuroleptic, which means seize the brain. And so they block about 70 to 90% of the dopamine transmission in the frontal lobes and the basal ganglia and the limbic system. And I used to, before I found out more about them, I thought of them as a chemical straitjacket, but actually they're a chemical lobotomy. And that's what's really seen as the therapeutic effect, because people who are disturbing to other people can't be so disturbing, at least for a while. And so that's why people are forced on them, which is what Psych Rights is all about, trying to help people not being forced to take these terrible drugs.
So for our audience, what are some of the names that they may have heard about Zyprexa from? Because most drugs have multiple names. There's your generic name and your other kinds of names. What other names is Zyprexa sold as?
The chemical name is olanzapine. And I think it's called Zyprexa. I know what you're saying, like Largactyl and, you know, these other drugs names are like Thorazine. But I think it's Zyprexa pretty much around the world. But olanzapine is the chemical name.
Okay. Now, you wrote a book called the Zyprexa Papers. Now, here at the Natural Healing Show, we've done a number of shows about natural healing for depression. And I'm the author of 10 books. Two of my 10 books are actually about how to heal depression naturally without drugs. So our audience is very interested in trying to do things naturally. Why did you write your book, The Zyprexa Papers?
I got involved in this extraordinary set of events towards the end of 2006, where this expert witness in this massive litigation over Zyprexa causing diabetes and other metabolic problems called me and wanted me to subpoena him for documents that were under a court secrecy order. And under that order, it said if he was subpoenaed in another case, he had to give Eli Lilly, the manufacturer of Zyprexa, notice and a reasonable opportunity to object before he could give them to me. But he wanted to get this information out into the world, and he was actually already working with the New York Times. And I was very interested in this because the mission of Law Project for Psychiatric Rights is to mount a strategic litigation campaign against forced psychiatric drugging and electroshock. And so, you know, it was very consistent with my goals too. So I did it. I thought Lilly would object in time, but they didn't. And I got to this information and got them out to the New York Times and other people. And these documents showed not only that Eli Lilly knew from the beginning that it caused diabetes and other metabolic problems. I mean, people would gain 100 pounds in a year on this drug. And also that they were illegally marketing it to children and the elderly, where it's particularly deadly in the elderly. It doubles mortality. And so the New York Times published a series of front page stories. And the New York Times, of course, came after me with, Eli Lilly came after me with a vengeance and threatened me with criminal contempt and to try and get me disbarred and all that. And I got hauled before the judge and I voluntarily went, but in Brooklyn, New York. And so the judge ended up ruling that I had, quote, conspired to steal these documents. And from my perspective, I had just followed the secrecy order that he had signed. So that's about half the book. And the other half is about my representation of Bill Bigley, the person for whom I subpoenaed the Zyprexa papers, and trying to keep him from being, I call it psychiatric imprisonment instead of involuntary commitment, and being drugged against his will. And psychiatry had just destroyed his life. And I knew when this happened, I just had to write a book about it. And people had been talking to me about, oh, you should write a book. You know, and I'll just publish on the internet and people can, you know, read it. They don't have to pay anything. But this needed to be a book. And so I finally got around to writing it.
So thank you for your service to humanity. Now, what does your research show? What is the side effects of Zyprexa?
So the big one is the metabolic problems that it causes. So it causes diabetes. Even in people that don't necessarily gain that much weight, it causes diabetes. And then it also other metabolic problems. I think they call it metabolic syndrome. And as I mentioned, it causes people to gain massive amounts of weight. That's the big one.
Okay. Now, other psychiatric drugs also cause metabolic problems. Are you familiar with, for our audience, could you share other psychiatric drugs that interfere with your metabolism?
Well, I'm not that familiar. The other so-called, neuroleptics, like Seroquel, is one of these newer generation drugs, and it causes QT elongation in the brain, in the heart, and that causes problem. And that's and I forget what other drug the military gives it, and the VA gives to people, and veterans are just kind of don't wake up often, you know, a lot of times, thousands of them from those drugs. And I'm not so sure. You're probably more familiar than I am with
Jim Gottstein, you are the founder of the Law Project for the Psychiatric Rights, which people can find out about at your website, psychrights.org. What exactly is the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights?
So it's a public interest law firm, and its mission is to mount a strategic litigation campaign against forced psychiatric drugging and electroshock. And also educate the public about the very harmful effects of these drugs. So, for example, the people in the public mental health system in the United States diagnosed with serious mental illness have 20 to 25 years shorter lifespan than the general public. Wow. And that was not true before people started being given these drugs. They're just so counterproductive. I mean, it's been shown that if you use other approaches, you could call more, you know, natural approaches, we can achieve an 80% recovery rate of people who experience their first, you know, psychotic break. I like to call it going crazy. An 80% recovery rate, whereas in our system, where basically they insist that people stay on these drugs forever, we have a 5% recovery rate. So 80% to 5%. And, people hate these drugs because they feel terrible on them. And they're very debilitating. I mean, people can't even read, you know, oftentimes. And so they want to go off of them. And if you've been on them for a while and get off, then you have a 40% recovery rate. So possibility. So, you know, that's eight times better than 5%, but half as good as 80%. So to me, what that really shows and is that how important it is to try and not get, you know, put people on these neuroleptics in the first place, because once they get put on them, all kinds of bad things happen.
So you said that people on psychiatric drugs, according to your research, have 20 to 25 years shorter lifespan. Is that correct?
Yes. There's actually a lot of research on that. And there's on the psychrights.org website, there's a section of it called Scientific Research by Topic. And there are studies cited there on the neuroleptics page, but it's quite well established. And there was this study by the National Association of State Mental Health Program Directors that they found the 25-year reduction in life. They didn't necessarily attribute it to the drugs, but it's pretty clear that's the bulk of it.
And you said that, and I want to clarify, you said that 80% of people who take natural approaches to healing their mind recover, and 5% of people who take psychiatric drugs recover. Did I get that right?
In particular, the neuroleptics. And I mean, it's not, there are some programs and approaches that have been shown to achieve this 80% recovery rate. And one of them was this study in the 1970s by Lauren Mosier, who was chief of schizophrenia research at the National Institute of Mental Health, called Soteria House. And their approach was, okay, we're going to assume people get better. We're going to be with them rather than do to them. Mm-hmm. And they went into this house, no more than six people. Were just helped through whatever they were going through, and they saw pretty close to an 80% recovery rate. And then more recently, there's this program, and it's kind of become more publicized in a certain area of Finland and Lapland called the open dialogue approach. And they consider the problem being the space between people. And they have this, you know, team, and they'll go and they'll bring a quote identified, you know, person, the problem person, and bring them in with the, you know, all their family and colleagues, and if they're in school student, you know, their classmates and things like that, and just work through it without the drugs if possible. And they actually achieved an 80% recovery rate doing that. They avoid the neuroleptics if at all possible.
Now, we're talking about neuroleptics. So for our audience, will you explain what are neuroleptics prescribed for? What conditions are people put on these drugs for?
So they're basically approved, and they're called they're mismarketed as antipsychotic. So if you hear antipsychotic, think of neuroleptic. And they're initially approved for schizophrenia, people diagnosed with schizophrenia. And then, you know, bipolar disorder. But then they do, you know, then they, in the U.S., a drug can be prescribed for any use, even if it's not approved for it. The drug companies are not supposed to market for anything except approved uses. And if it's not approved, it's called off-label, which people recognize that term. And these drugs are prescribed off-label for all kinds of things. So, for example, Zyprexa is given to the elderly in nursing homes because it makes them so they can't complain. Uh-huh. So they get, you know, so they can't even get out of bed. Like I said, it doubles the mortality rate of the elderly. And I've talked to people, that that's happened to their parents, and then they die. And the people in the nursing home say, oh, your mother was old. And then I've talked to people who they've gotten their parent off of these drugs, Zyprexa and other ones, and they've come back to life. So it makes people more manageable in nursing homes. And then maybe even more tragic is they're often prescribed to children for acting out. And it's a terrible thing for a child to be diagnosed with a mental illness and they're fraudulently told there's something wrong with their brain. They need to take these drugs for the rest of their lives, and maybe if they're lucky, they won't get hospitalized so much. You're not responsible for your actions. And, you know, these are all just exactly the wrong messages to send to children. I mean, the worst of it is in foster children who, you know, a child gets put in foster care because they've been found to have been the subject of abuse or neglect. Okay, well, that may or not be true, but usually it is. And so that's going to cause a child to act out, right? And so then that gets, you know, diagnosed as a mental illness. And then they get yanked out of their home, that's traumatic. And that's, you know, often causes a child to act out. And some are happy to be, you know, yanked out of their homes, but mostly not. And then a lot of these foster homes are pretty horrific, and that can cause them to act out. So instead of helping them deal with what's happened to them, we say there's something wrong with them, and they have to take these drugs, including the neuroleptics. And what we should be doing, first off, is helping parents to be better parents. And most, you know, some parents are terrible, you know, to their children, but most parents want to do the best for their children. And there are all kinds of reasons why, you know, they mess up. And so we should help the parents be better parents, and we should help children be successful. And one of the most important things is to learn how to control your emotions to act in a, you know, basically a socially acceptable way. And so these messages that children get that they can't control themselves is just the absolute worst thing.
So Jim Gottstein, let's now take a break and listen to a message from one of our commercial sponsors here at UK Health Radio. And we'll be right back with the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio and Jim Gottstein talking about the dangers of Zyprexa.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Jim Gottstein, author of the Zyprexa Papers and founder of the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights. What natural healing methods have you found in listening to people? Because it sounds like you were listening to, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people who've been affected by these drugs. What natural approaches do you hear work best instead of Zyprexa?
So the main thing is really relationships, is to you know, have a good, safe relationship or relationship. So the most important thing for people to recover after a diagnosis of serious mental illness is you have to have hope that you can get better. I mean, and the system gives this message of hopelessness. And it's really good to have someone that believes in you. So that's kind of fundamentally it. And, you know, I talked about soteria houses and open dialogue. There's also this, these programs called peer respites. And what you find is that people who have gone through this system and gotten through it and out the other side and, you know, basically recovered, really have a way to relate to people that are going through it in ways that people that haven't gone through it. And those are called peers and peer support. And so there's a growing group of what's called peer respites, where people can just come into this house, usually for about 7 days, and just have a safe place where they can go through what they're going through. Now, these tend to be for people who have been in the, you know, in the system, been in and out of the system, as opposed to people who first experience a break. I think it's the reason for that is more that people who have been in the system know about the peer respites. Another really interesting one is called the Hearing Voices Network. It turns out that a pretty large percentage of people, like 10%, hear voices. And but it's only the people who the voices cause, you know, serious problems for them that they get scooped up by the psychiatric system. And so the Hearing Voices Network, it's basically support groups that get together and to talk about how to deal with the voices. And there are different mechanisms for that. And that's proven to be really helpful to people. And that what they say is they don't ask what's wrong with you, they ask what's happened to you. Mm-hmm. Those are it. I mean, there's this whole you know, group of people, peer support, and there's this terrific program called Intentional Peer Support, which really goes into the principles. And one of the problems is that the peer support concept has been co-opted by the mental health system. So they get what they call peers, and what they try and use them for is to coerce people into taking these drugs, or what they call medication compliance. Mm-hmm. And what I found is one of the most positive things that you can do is be in denial that, for example, that you have a mental illness, because that whole concept is the way that it's put together by psychiatry is really almost certainly wrong. I mean, there's never been proven any brain defect or abnormality in people diagnosed with serious mental illness until the drugs are introduced, and then you see all kinds of brain changes. So, and people, I mean, there's this guy, Michael Cornwell, he's a therapist now, but I don't know, probably in his 70s. But when he was young, he got into trouble and, you know, went crazy. And he just stayed in his grandmother's basement for months, was supported there, and he got better. I think one of the terrible things that's happened is that religious communities have turned over this to psychiatry. And I think that churches and synagogues and, you know, congregations, Muslims can, you know, could be really helpful by just providing, you know, loving support. And it's really important for people to feel safe, because most of the time people just are terrified, and that's causing the problem. And almost always, when you're quote in psychosis, you have sleep deprivation. So it's really important to, you know, get sleep, and it's best to do it if you can do it without the drugs, but maybe, you know, a pill just, you know, to not a neuroleptic, to get, you know, a good night's sleep might be worth it, just for, you know, a very short period of time.
So Jim Gottstein, this is really, really helpful information. And for our audience, I want to share, I'm now 63 years old. And when I was 34 years old, which was 29 years ago, I got off lithium and antidepressants after being on all that for 18 years. And as a medical intuitive healer, when I look back on my childhood, being depressed was the logical response to what was going on, right? And, you know, when you're put on these drugs, you're told that you have a chemical imbalance and you have to be on them forever. So I feel very blessed to have been off of all these drugs and drug free for 29 years. And I wrote two books about how to get out of how to heal depression naturally without drugs. The most recent being Banish the Blues Now, which is available as paperback, ebook, and audiobook. So if you don't like to read, you can listen to Banish the Blues Now. Now, you are open about your own personal experience about having been in a psychiatric hospital. I remember going into one of those places when I was 20 years old. I was there for 10 days and I vowed, I'm like, never going back. I'm going to do whatever it takes to never have to go back. So you were also in a psychiatric hospital. Would you share for our audience, what was your personal experience and how did you get well?
Yeah, so in 1982, when I was 29, I took on too much, and I got sleep deprived. I won't necessarily go into the whole thing, but basically, I jumped out of a second floor window in my underwear because the devil was coming down the hall. I knew how to do a parachute landing fall, and I figured I would be fine if I did that. And that was logical, right? The devil's coming down the hall. Anyway, so I did a parachute landing fall. I was fine. And I got put in a straitjacket and hauled to the hospital. And they, you know, injected me with something to put me to sleep. And when I woke up, there was a person at the end of the bed with a clipboard and asked me what day it was. And I asked him, how long have I been asleep? So he wrote down that I was not oriented to time, right? I didn't know what day it was. And so, you know, that's kind of how it went. And basically, I was told, those that believed I was a lawyer said I would, you know, I'd never be able to do that again. And when I told them I'd gone to Harvard Law School, that confirmed I was delusional. And that's one of the things that happens all the time, is they just assume that you're not telling the truth, or what you're saying is not true, when it's easily verifiable. And so I was there for 30 days. I was just really lucky. My mother knew this psychiatrist, Robert Alberts, a fabulous guy. And he said, you just got sleep deprived. Anybody will go crazy if they get sleep deprived enough. You just have to learn how to deal with that. And that's what I did. I mean, there's a 9-minute video on YouTube called Escape from Psychiatry, Jim Gottstein's Story, where I go through it more. But so I feel extremely lucky that I wasn't made permanently mentally ill by the system. And that's why, you know, it really changed the trajectory of my life. And so I became an advocate for people diagnosed with serious mental illness.
For myself, I was on lithium and antidepressants for 18 years. And then what happened to me was I got really, really sick. And the doctor said to me, quote, unquote, the medical doctors, these drugs are killing you. And I thought, oh, good. Now what? Right. So I spent 3 years researching at the Emory Medical Library, and I wrote my first book. But I too feel very blessed. And what's interesting to me was I didn't start feeling happy until I started doing natural healing. And that's why I'm so passionate about sharing with others how to heal yourself naturally, so that we can avoid getting on these awful drugs with all these terrible side effects. Now, you wrote an article called What Happened to Britney Spears Can Happen to You. So for our audience, actually, let's take a break from our commercial sponsors and I'll come back and I'd like to hear your answer. So hang in there, and we're listening to the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio and Jim Gottstein, the founder of Law Project for Psychiatric Rights.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming man who infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Jim Gottstein, author of the Zyprexa papers and founder of the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights, you wrote an article called What Happened to Britney Spears Can Happen to You. Two-part question. So for our audience, what actually did happen to Britney Spears, who's a world-famous, multi-million-dollar selling songwriter and singer, and what happened to her? And why do you feel it could happen to others as well?
Well, Brittany, I think she was in her young 20s, you know, mid-20s. She had a couple of, you know, young children. The paparazzi were just after her all the time. And she did a couple of things that were weird, I would say. I mean, she shaved her head. Okay, big deal, you know, from my perspective. And then, you know, she got angry at some paparazzi at one point and got out, and I forget what she did. She may have kind of struck one with an umbrella or something. And so, and her father had her psychiatrically imprisoned over this, and then got her forced on drugs. And then in California, they call them conservatorships. And what they are, and their conservatorships or guardianships, same thing, over the people's property or person or both. And basically, they take people's rights away and give them to someone else. So it puts someone in the status of a child with a parent, where the guardian or conservator has complete, well, it doesn't have to be complete, but usually it is, complete decision-making control over that person, either their property or their decision-making. So, like, including where you live. I mean, her father, Jamie Spears, I mean, he controlled who her daughter saw, who she talked to, and basically just worked her to death, you know, not quite to death, but, you know, she made tens of millions of dollars, mostly, you know, on tours in Las Vegas and her albums. And he was just sucking up that money. They had all these people, you know, really getting her money. And and this happens a lot to people. I mean, it happens a lot to elderly people, and there's a lot of financial abuse. And it happens a lot to people who get diagnosed with schizophrenia or other serious mental illness. So in California, they passed this act just this last session called the CARE Court Act. And the idea there is that they say, oh, all these homeless people have mental illness, and we're going to put them in conservatorships and, you know, and make them, you know, basically take these drugs. And so I think in California, if the conservator, you know, says, I consent to my ward being given these drugs against her will, that's considered voluntary because the conservator agreed to it. And that's the situation I found my Bill Bigley and my client. And one of the things in kind of the last trial I was able to represent him, you know, I had proven that the drugs would shorten his life. And the guardian said, well, it's not really the quantity of his life that matters. It's the quality of his life. What Bill felt was quality of life for him was irrelevant to him. And sadly, the judge ordered it, saying that, well, even, you know, I can accept that the drugs are going to shorten his life, but Mr. Bigley is not well now, and he's not getting, you know, and he's getting worse. So he ordered him to be drugged against his will. So that's one of the common scenarios, is to get control of people who are being disturbing, is to put them in a guardianship or conservatorship. And the elderly too, you know, they're considered that. Basically, the idea is the person is not competent to make decisions, and therefore someone has to make decisions for them. But there are other approaches. There's this one, supported decision making, where you help people make decisions that make sense. And, you know, people make decisions all the time that are not really in their best interest, and you don't take their right to do that. I mean, you know,
so Jim Gottstein, so for our audience, tell us the rest of the story. So her father, Jamie Spears, put her into a conservatorship, forced her to take psychiatric drugs. How did she get out of the conservatorship, and is she on medication now? What's the end of the story?
So she didn't even know that she had the right to contest it. And there was this group of fans that would, you know, free Britney, this Free Britney movement. And they were really pretty vocal. And she called into, she had a hearing. I think it was 2021, the summer of 2021, where she called in and someone against the judge's order recorded what Brittany had said, which said at the hearing. And she basically said how horrible it was, that it made no sense. And she didn't want it anymore. She didn't need it. She never really needed it. And that became very public. And so then she got a lawyer who would actually work for her. I mean, one of the things that happens is you get assigned a lawyer and they're just part of the system. And they basically do not represent their client's interests. But she got this, you know, high powered lawyer, and they went to court and got the conservatorship dissolved. So a huge amount of her money kind of disappeared, but she still has, you know, a fair amount. I don't know if she's still on psychiatric drugs or not. I'm pretty sure she was on lithium, like you were, and that's very toxic to the kidneys. I have two friends who died from lithium. You know, I haven't seen much of her. I think, you know, she's just trying to live her life, you know, in freedom. I haven't really seen much of her lately.
So
she may be on Maui sometimes.
So Jim Gottstein, what is your definition of psychiatric imprisonment? What is psychiatric imprisonment?
So they call it, euphemistically, they call it involuntary commitment. So, but really what it is people get locked up in a psychiatric ward. And that's a lot like, you know, that's imprisonment as far as I'm concerned. If you look at the definition of inmate, it says someone who is confined to a prison or hospital. So again, that sounds like psychiatric imprisonment. And so, and one of the things is that, you know, people get locked up supposedly, you know, because they're suicidal. But men are 100 times more, you know, more likely to commit suicide in the week after they get discharged from a psychiatric hospital than otherwise. And women are over 200 times more likely. So you mentioned your experience. Psychiatric hospitals, I mean, they are terrible places, and they're really crazy making. They're just not therapeutic places at all.
I remember being at Brown University and walking around one evening and seeing this gentleman, and he was wearing hospital garb and carrying a bag of medication. Well, he had literally been dumped on the street from a psychiatric hospital, and there was no plan for where he was going. So it was like 9 or 10 at night. He was wandering around with a bag of his medication, completely disoriented. It was heartbreaking. So Jim Gottstein, what are the rights of children or elderly people who are forced to take psychiatric drugs?
Well, let's talk about adults first. Children is a little more complicated, but basically you have the absolute right to decide what, you know, medication, I don't call them the drugs, to take, unless you're not competent to make that decision. So then So then you have these kangaroo courts where it's determined that the person doesn't have capacity or is incompetent to decline the drugs, and so then the court orders them to. But you also have the state's not supposed, or the court's not supposed to order it unless they can prove that it's in the person's best interest and there's no less intrusive alternative to the drugs. Well, and on PsychRight's website, psychrights.org, there's this link to, it's called the Forced Drugging Defense Package. And it's a set of pleadings, generic pleadings to resist it. And a key part of it is how harmful and counterproductive the psychiatric drugs are. And so, but if you look at the actual proof, you know, and the actual evidence, the psychiatric drugs, the neuroleptics and the antidepressants especially, they're counterproductive and, as I said, very physically harmful. So I don't think you can legitimately prove that they're in a person's best interest. Now, I know people, I sound pretty anti-psych drugs, and I am, but I know people who find them helpful, and, you know, I'm not going to say they shouldn't have access to them. I think they should be told the truth about them, but even if not, if they want them, fine. But people should never be forced, and I don't think in the U.S. at least that it's ever possible to legitimately establish the right to drug someone against their will, because not only can you not prove it's in their best interest, there are less intrusive alternatives, which is, you know, which we've talked about a little bit. And so people's rights are just trampled as a matter of course. And a big reason is the lawyers are appointed basically to check the box off that the person has a lawyer. And oftentimes their attitude, if my client wasn't crazy, they'd know that this was good for them. And that's just not the way that the lawyer is supposed to be. The state or the hospital is, you know, under our system, we have this adversary system, and the state is supposed to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the drugs are in the person's best interest and there's no less intrusive alternative and that the person's incompetent. And the defense lawyer is supposed to aggressively resist that. And they just don't. And so massive numbers of people are ordered to take these drugs against their will.
So I think it's really important that we here at the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio talk about the dangers of the psychiatric drugs and also what works. And I know for myself, it took me 3 years to write my first book about how to heal depression without drugs, which again, I updated in Banish the Blues Now. So 3 years of lots of work. I remember I joked I could have made more money if I'd worked at McDonald's cleaning toilets. But I remember what my driving motivation was. I thought, if I can help even only one person avoid what I went through, it's totally worth it. And since then, I've helped countless people with natural methods to heal depression naturally without drugs and all kinds of mind-challenging experiences. So it's so important that we share this information and we share the hope that you can get off of these drugs and be even better. So again, I've been off of all that stuff for 29 years. How long have you been off psychiatric medication?
So, since, you know, I was on them for 30 days and then in 82 and then briefly in 1985, I got into trouble again. But actually, if I get to the point where I'm sleep deprived and I feel that I'm going over the, you know, edge, I will take a benzodiazepine. I like Halcyon, even though it's much maligned because especially in the UK, people, murdered other people on it. But I took a much lower dose. But I will take just one pill one night to break that, you know, lack of sleep cycle. And then, but even then, on the next night, I know that I will have trouble sleeping.
Yeah.
Because of it. And, but it's worth it because I kind of went from danger. And I'll go years without it. I mean, I think it's been over 4 years since I took anything.
So, as a medical intuitive healer, I hear people, again, from all walks of life in all countries, and I hear their stories. And I can remember hearing this story about a professional woman who had trouble sleeping. And she got up in the middle of the night, caused a car wreck, and was thrown in jail from taking sleep medication. And it's
maybe was it Ambien?
Yes, it was Ambien. And this is a professional person. And she said, there she was in jail. She said the worst thing was she didn't know whether she'd hurt anyone. And her dog was with her. She got thrown in jail and her dog was put in the kill shelter, all because she took Ambien. So you've been listening to the Natural Healing Show for UK Health Radio. We've been talking about a super tough subject, which is how to protect yourself from psychiatric imprisonment. Our guest today has been Jim Gottstein, author of the Zyprexa papers. You can find out more about Jim Gottstein and his fabulous work at the Law Project for Psychiatric Rights at psychrights.com.
Also,
or psychrights.org. Thank you for correcting me. JimGottstein.com and the Zyprexa.com. My name is Catherine Kerrigan, medical intuitive healer, Amazon number one bestselling author. You can find out more about me and my work at CatherineKerrigan.com and UnlimitedEnergyNow.com. While you're there, definitely sign up for my newsletter so you can learn even more about how you can heal yourself naturally. And Jim Gottstein and I are definitely living proof that you can get off these drugs and you can actually be healthier and live longer when you choose natural healing. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Natural Healing Show. Keep it natural with the Natural Healing Show.